Chapter 8. Science.
As we saw in the last chapter, the fear of death and the terrifying uncertainty of existence prompted early man to seek comfort, or at least assurance, in the supernatural. Who created us? How does the sun travel through the sky? Why does it burn when I urinate? For millennia, the respective answers to those questions were invisible cloud men, star boats, and you really must have angered the invisible cloud men. But eventually, the nerds of our higher intelligence grew tired of being bullied by the Theta Chi's of faith and decided to fight back. Rationality bulked itself up through a rigorous training regimen of experimentation, observation, and critical thinking known as science. Emboldened, it began offering its own explanations for things. We were not created by invisible cloud men, but through an intricate evolutionary process. The sun's travels were actually a perpetual reflection of our own planet's movement. And it burned when you pee because you have dick anthrax, and I think we both know why that is. For most of history, science maintained a cordial relationship with religion. Early science was, to a large extent, astronomy. There was seemingly nothing in the skies that contradicted religion's idea of a higher power. And then came the telescope. Magnification began to reveal uncomfortable truths about the universe and our place in it. Through scientific study, men like Galileo began offering a view of the universe quite incompatible with religious teaching. The question then became, well, who was right? God or Galileo? For fairness' sake, the Pope got to judge. The next 500 years saw great geniuses making discoveries and insights that immeasurably deepened our understanding of the universe, the speeds of light and sound, the theories of evolution and relativity, the laws of gravity, thermodynamics, and attraction. But as wondrous as these findings were, science, pure science, tended to have difficulty expanding beyond its core fan base of 18 to 65-year-old balding, bespectacled males. Luckily, pure science had a friend and patron in its wealthier and better-looking cousin, technology. Technology was the branch of human knowledge by which the theoretical became the practical, and the practical became the obsolete. It proved the ideal conduit for human ingenuity, really kicking in with the dawn of the Industrial Revolution, which was different from a real revolution in that it killed millions more people. Whereas religion promised eternal life immediately upon death, technology promised an eternally better life immediately upon obtaining. For example, the Weber Summit S670 propane gas grill with SnapJet burner ignition system. Man, that's a good grill. By 2010, science had positioned itself as religion's arch nemesis. Yet the superficial difference in their methodologies masked a deeper kinship. Like religion, science placed its faith in cosmic forces that were invisible and sounded crazy. Filled with a sense of larger purpose, its high priests often considered themselves above morality and ethics. Its institutions were corporate and bureaucratic and largely dependent on tax exemptions. More importantly, from the semi-automatic rifle to prosthetic limbs, from the deep-sea oil drilling rig to the containment dome, science proved every bit the equal of religion in its ability to almost solve the problems it caused. Religion, at least, didn't suffer from arrogance. Science's case is more tragic. Conceived as a means of controlling the universe, it wound up getting away from us. Our capacity to achieve scientific breakthroughs was exceeded only by our lack of understanding of post-breakthrough realities. The more we played God, the more we began realizing we had perhaps been too critical of him. In the end, God was more than happy to stand aside and let us use the toys we'd built to hasten, if not downright cause, our ultimate demise. Well played, Invisible Cloud Man. Well played.
The scientific method.
Pioneered by ancient Greeks, developed by medieval Muslims, systematized in the Renaissance, perfected in the Enlightenment, and patented by the DuPont Corporation, the scientific method improved on man's previous tradition, making shit up. The scientific method added the crucial step of experimentation, using real-world data to test the hypothesis that, if proven, would be accepted by scientists as a theory, which could then be used to get a grant, or in some cases, tenure.
The scientific method in action. Number 1, identify the problem.
In 1854, hundreds of people in London's Soho district suddenly came down with cholera. At first, this was considered a slight improvement on their usual state of dysentery.
Cholera epidemic! 127 dead in 3 days! Survivors flee Soho! Soho lofts now available!
Number 2. Research the problem.
Dr. John Snow, fresh off the discovery of his eponymous form of precipitation, arrives on the scene to gather information. As his notebooks reveal, his suspicions quickly focus on a public well, known as the Broad Street Pump, oddly close to what were called at the time, festering public shitholes.
Number 3. Formulate a hypothesis.
As he later recounted, Snow then turned the evidence into a revolutionary new theory.
Having thus gathered the data, I could not help but wonder whether the epidemic was not in some way related to the fact that every one of its sufferers had drunk water absolutely teeming with human shit.
Dr. John Snow, on the possible health detriments of consuming massive amounts of human excrement.
Number 4. Test the hypothesis.
Snow set out to verify his idea experimentally, pioneering two fields, epidemiology and college student income earning.
Attention, Oxford students. 30 volunteers wanted quickly for study. 10 to drink from Broad Street Pump. 10 to drink from uncontaminated pump. 10 to eat naught but shit. Last group earns 3 pence extra.
Number 5. Analyze the results. Draw a conclusion.
Southwark Waterworks Company, without admitting any prior actionable wrongdoing, now advises the inhabitants of the Soho district not to drink any water which has previously been shat in. We also announce with regret the discontinuation of our popular line of bottled refreshments, cesspit spritzers and night soil nectars.
Turned out I was right. It was the shit.
Dr. Snow, once again from his seminal paper on the possible health detriments of consuming massive amounts of human excrement.
Bigger.
Bigger is better. A tiny three-word expression that completely belied itself. But it reflected a larger truth. We liked things truly large. In fact, bigness as an end in itself was a goal in fields as diverse as engineering, architecture, transportation, gastronomy, weaponry, and shoulder pathology. Why? Because it spoke to our soaring ambition to make an enduring mark on the planet. Surely it was this noble impulse, nothing else, that explains all the tall, rock-hard human erections you've discovered thrusting themselves into Earth's virginal skies.
Smaller.
It was a sad but universal fact of human life that any technology, no matter how incredible, eventually came to be seen as cumbersome. For instance, the first cordless telephone inspired awe. 1 year later, using the very same phone could only be seen as an ironic tribute to a time when we were forced to lug around comically giant cordless phones. Nearly every technological advancement in human history was quickly followed by the phrase, "Yeah, that's great, but how am I going to get that on the plane?"
Faster.
Faster was smaller's more demanding technology twin. In less than 100 years, the travel time from New York City to San Francisco was cut from 6 months by horse and foot to just 6 hours by plane. You'd think we would be endlessly grateful for the advancement, yet God forbid the flight gets delayed 40 minutes by fog. Do you people have any idea how to run an airline? No, I will not lower my voice. I am a decent and upstanding citizen, driven to skull-fucking the gate attendant for Continental Airlines because I may or may not miss my cousin's rehearsal dinner in Montecito. The only thing that increased more rapidly than the speed of new technology was the speed with which we became irritated at its now relative slowness. Eventually, we developed the capacity to be instantaneously disappointed. This was the final triumph of faster.
In the ruins, racetracks.
These were outdoor arenas where we would sit on benches for entire steamy afternoons watching cars drive around an oval very, very fast. One's affection, or lack thereof, for this activity was an indicator of whether or not your ancestors owned slaves.
Convenience.
If necessity was the mother of invention, laziness was its drunken stepfather. Man created many contraptions to free up as much of his time as possible. This helped us achieve our life's greatest goal, doing nothing.
Invention. Zipper. What it was for. Fastening. What it spared us. Embarrassment. Genital drafts. Freed us to spend more time enjoying urinating next to strangers. Invention. Barcode. What it was for. Inventory management. What it spared us. Having to yell for price checks. Freed us to get high before going to work as cashier. Invention. Washer dryer. What it was for. Washing. Drying. What it eased. Washing drying. Or drying washing. Freed us to iron and fold. Prepare meal for husband.
Gods of science.
The great men and women of science achieved so much and transformed the world so profoundly that they were eventually able to shed the nerd tag they'd dealt with since childhood and be accorded a certain grudging respect. Here are all of the famous scientists who ever lived.
Albert Einstein, 1879 to 1955.
With his eccentric appearance, German accent, and unbridled passion for Victorian pornography, Albert Einstein was our most cliched scientist. His theories on relativity also made him our most brilliant pure scientist. When he died, us lesser beings sawed open his skull and preserved his brain in a mason jar. Not so fucking smart now, are you, Einstein?
Gregor Mendel, 1822 to 1884.
Gregor Mendel was a monk whose experiments with peas laid the groundwork for the field of genetics. His slightly raunchier experiments with carrots nearly got him kicked out of the seminary.
Isaac Newton, 1643 to 1727.
His classic double album, Newton Comes Alive, sold over 20 million copies, but he's perhaps best remembered as the first to articulate the laws of classical physics, including thermodynamics and gravity.
Thomas Edison, 1847 to 1931.
Edison, our greatest inventor, invented the light bulb, the phonograph, direct current electricity, and the crushing of one's competitors through lawsuits and negative PR campaigns. He exemplifies the applied scientist, the tinkerer, who views knowledge as a means to an end. That end, getting so rich, you no longer care that you're deaf.
Alexander Graham Bell, 1847 to 1922.
Mr. Watson, come here. I want you.
With those historic words, Bell transmitted his voice from one room to the next, thus achieving his dream of inventing a Watson summoner. Months later, he realized it might be put to other uses as well.
Marie Curie, 1867 to 1934.
Marie Curie is a hero. Marie Curie was a scientist who discovered radium, even though she was a woman. She was an inspiration to women because she did not let obstacles stop her from doing science. Annie Taylor, 11. Marie Curie, A Book Report, 2006.
The Wright Brothers, 1871 to 1948. 1867 to 1912.
Orville and Wilbur Wright were two of the worst bicycle mechanics who ever lived. But in some ways, that's not really important, because on December 17, 1903, the brothers fulfilled one of mankind's oldest dreams with the first ever manned flight. It lasted 12 seconds, but took off 50 minutes late due to tower traffic on the tarmac.
Health.
As confident as the human species was that after death, a higher power awaited us in an eternal utopia filled with everyone we've ever known and or virgins, see religion, one thing we all feared was death. And although we never quite succeeded in conquering the Grim Reaper, we did manage to confuse and delay him, allowing many of us to enjoy up to 20 extra years.
Nailed it. Vaccines.
We used to die of diseases spread by microorganisms jealous of our size and good looks. But all that changed with the development of the life-saving injections known as vaccines. Their secret ingredient? A little bit of the deadly microbe itself. Yes, it turned out that the same hair-of-the-dog approach that cured hangovers also worked on polio and rubella. Vaccines saved countless lives. Although try explaining that to a sobbing 2-year-old being pierced by a syringe.
Spotlight on Holistic Medicine.
Believers in holistic medicine rejected Western medical approaches in favor of time-honored spiritual wellness practices. Unless the accident was bad, in which case they let a Western ambulance race them to a Western emergency room where a Western doctor could reset their pelvis, and they could get back to their healing yogic rituals.
Medical bureaucracy.
As a society, we believed that only one thing was more important than caring for our sick and injured: ensuring that they first filled out the proper paperwork. Medical bureaucracy was so important to us that nations sometimes spent more money maintaining them than it would have cost to provide health care for all of its uninsured citizens. This hilarious irony was often lost on the desperately ill.
Psychology.
The human brain was the most complex, powerful, and mysterious organ on Earth. Even at the zenith of our scientific knowledge, the field of psychology could only scratch the surface of the brain's incomparable brilliance. But take that opinion with a grain of salt, because the organ we used to study the brain was, in fact, the brain. That built-in conflict of interest cast doubt onto the entire field of brain-related study. It meant that either this gray orb of protein was a beautiful hive of transmagical powers utilized to only 10% of its capacity, or it was just another narcissistic asshole.
Sigmund Freud, the wizard of id.
As the founder of psychoanalysis, Sigmund Freud hypothesized that doctor-patient dialogue could improve mental health and free up deep-seated resentments he assumed everyone harbored, having spent his entire childhood being called sissy-mooned homo. Freud insisted the psyche of every human ever born could be boiled down to three basic parts: the id, the ego, and the superego. A claim so ambitious that merely suggesting it proved the existence of the latter. In his book, The Interpretation of Dreams, Freud asserted that dreams were the royal road to the unconscious, and that any pantsless hitchhikers you encountered while on that road were only there because of your daddy issues. He also advocated prescribing cocaine to treat mental illness, which may explain why many of Freud's friends and family members became increasingly dependent on his services, especially on weekends. But Freud was perhaps best remembered for his assertion that both males and females had a subconscious obsession with phalluses, causing them to see the male sex organ practically everywhere they looked. Critics, however, disputed this, saying you gotta be a pretty sick individual to see dicks all over the place.
Pseudoscience.
Of course, science and religion could never provide all the answers we humans were seeking. To help fill in the gaps, we came up with pseudoscience. We developed entire industries that promised relief from all forms of physical and emotional anguish through the simple use of herbs, stretching and/or pressing on certain parts of one's feet. And it totally worked. Like, this friend of ours had inoperable brain cancer. The doctors gave him 6 months to live, so he went to see this guy in Chinatown who told him it was actually a clogged meridian or something. Anyway, the guy massaged his armpit for 10 minutes and told him to start living again. Dude, that was 12 years ago. We shit you not.
Weaponry.
As much progress as science made to keep us alive, it was also constantly overshadowed by our new scientific ways of killing each other. When we first unlocked the power of the atom, we could have used it for anything: free electrical power to help the poor, space travel, medical breakthroughs. Instead, our first move was to build a bomb that could etch permanent shadows on the sidewalk. The goal was to create a weapon where one man could simultaneously kill every other person, making him the winner. And so it was for millennia. Every time we made a discovery, our first order of business was deciding how it could best be used to extinguish the lives of those who hadn't thought of it yet. We never figured out solar-powered cars, but if you're in the market for some space laser-guided nuclear rocket bombs.
FAQs. Future alien questions.
Were scientists the most esteemed members of your civilization?
Absolutely. The only people more renowned than scientists were actors, musicians, athletes, politicians, game show hosts, heiresses, religious leaders, cartoonists, plumbers, serial killers, celebrity chefs, and women who looked good in swimsuits.
What was the highest reward for a scientist's lifetime of dedication to human knowledge?
To be feted by Scandinavians, as they received their Nobel Prize. This was an annual award given to our greatest scientists, our most inspiring peacemakers, and our most ethnically diverse authors. It came with a large cash prize, a handsome medal, and a moment of fame so infinitesimally brief could only be measured by fellow scientists.
What are your biggest regrets in terms of a scientific discovery or breakthrough you failed to make?
Jetpack. Jetpack was 1 through 4, 5. Maybe cure for cancer. And then coming in at 6 again. Jetpack!
How did scientists handle the weighty moral responsibilities implicit in their work?
By subcontracting it to a special group of people known as ethicists. Ethicists spent their time agonizing over, writing papers about, and attending conferences dedicated to the moral implications of fields like cloning, stem cell research, and psychopharmacology. This allowed their colleagues to continue their research work unencumbered by concerns like evil and unfairness and widespread loss of human life.
Did you ever discover the wormholes in space that make interstellar travel quick and easy?
Wait, what?
Never mind. It seems like there were far more male scientists than female.
Until very late in our history, women were discouraged from scientific pursuits because the blood in the brains of the men working with them would be diverted to their constantly throbbing erections. What little male brain power was left would be used in the employment of microscopes, test tubes, and other lab equipment to hide these erections.
Man, you people were horny.
Yeah. It's shameful.
Your technology suggests a deep understanding of mathematics, yet many of your larger buildings appear to be missing a 13th floor.
Well, see, that's because while every other number is an abstract mathematical quantity, 13 was a hideous demon integer. You know, we avoided it not only in the numbering of floors, but in any calculations involved in the construction of a building. Ironically, the resulting engineering errors killed exactly 13 million people. Coincidence? Yes.
If you knew some of your technological advances were coming at the expense of your environment, why did you implement them?
Yeah, simple cost-benefit analysis. We enjoyed drinking hot coffee in a cold room in the middle of the summer more than we enjoyed other animals being alive.